My Mac Podcast number 157. It's a quiet night. I'm all alone. And I have a new baby in the house. How cool is that?
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
Hey, thanks for downloading My Mac Podcast number 157. I am Tim Robertson. I am the publisher of MyMac.com, and I'm the host of this here podcast. This is the 157th weekly podcast, and honestly, it's been a long time since I've done a podcast all by my lonesome. No Chad Perry, no Guy Searle, no Robert Hazelrig, no John Nemirovsky, not even David Cohen. Of course, for David, as I record this, it's like 4 in the morning, so, you know, for him to be here would be an act of God, I think. Or an act of divorce on his wife's part, probably. As I record this, it is Thursday night, December 6th, about 11 o'clock at night. So I'm going to probably keep this pretty short. Now, I know on the last week's show we were talking to Guy Searle, and it looked like he was going to record a podcast for this week, and he actually did. And from my understanding, it was a really good podcast, but he had a software technical glitch, and the entire podcast was unusable. Really sucks. I know Guy put a lot of time and a lot of effort, and it was the first time that he was really running the show on the podcast. And, you know, when little glitches like that happens, it can really tick you off. And I know Guy's really ticked off about it right now, even though it's really not his fault. These things happen. He had a really good conversation with, my understanding is, because I was only there for a little bit of it. But he talked with Rich Lefko, he talked with Donnie Yankolo, and John Nemirovsky. And I want to thank all four of them for attempting to get the podcast going this week. And, you know, I'm sure it would have been a great show, but, you know, these things happen, so we'll carry on and we'll do an abbreviated podcast all by my lonesome this week. As I said at the beginning, I am by myself here on the show, but family-wise, we added a new member. My son was born Tuesday, 2 days ago. I've been talking about, you know, my wife being pregnant for a while now. It seems like a lot of the podcasts that I listen to, a lot of people are having babies. So you can put me in there too. Well, I didn't have a baby. My wife did. But you can put me in there as well. My wife gave birth to a 9-pound boy on Tuesday, right around 3 o'clock. I think it was exactly 3 o'clock when he finally emerged in all his glory. His name is Cole. And, like I said, 9 pounds, he's doing great. At the moment, he's sleeping upstairs in his room that he shares with his 4-year-old sister, Brooke. And obviously, Cole will be a Mac user growing up. How could he not be? He's going to be an Apple fan. I mean, just all you have to do is look around my office and you'll see he's not really going to have a choice. I keep that boy away from Windows. Brooke is already loving being a big sister. She doesn't quite know what to make of a lot of the things that Cole does. And when we change his diaper, she thinks that's really funny. Enough of the baby talk. Let's get into some Mac news. And I got a couple news stories, and I got a couple little personal anecdotes that happened to me over the last couple weeks that I'll get into a little bit. First up, from I read this up on MacNN, pretty good Mac website. Pally research analyst Richard Greenfield is reporting that Apple has made a rare concession to the movie studios to raise the average selling price of movies on the iTunes Music Store. The new price, $15, which is only a couple bucks less than a DVD. Well, yeah, it's a couple bucks less than the standard retail price, the ones that the manufacturer set, but very few places sell DVDs for anything more than, you know, $15, $16, $17, unless it's a special 2-disc set, and then those are $19.99. But usually the day and the entire first week that a DVD comes out, they're like $14.99 at Walmart or Target or Best Buy, and sometimes even cheaper than that up on Amazon.com. Now, I don't work at Apple. Nobody at Apple is sending me an email telling me what's going on, but, you know, I got to be honest with you, $15 to download let's be honest, a pretty crappy version of a movie from the iTunes Music Store. Boy, that just seems like a lot of money. To be honest, I bought maybe 3 or 4 movies since Apple started selling movies on the iTunes Store. I think I got Invincible. I got the kids one. I don't even remember what that was now. But, you know, here's the thing. I've watched each one of those movies maybe once. Probably the most viewed video was a bunch of free ones from Sesame Street that I downloaded when they first came available on the iTunes Store. And Brooke, the 4-year-old, has watched those numerous times. She'll sit in front of the computer and watch the 20-minute episodes of Sesame Street. And when they're over, she wants to watch the next one. So, I don't know. I wonder if a lot of you buy movies on the iTunes Music Store. I mean, the quality is just horrible. They don't look very good. At least not compared to a DVD. I don't know. I don't see that Apple, this is going to help Apple any, and I know for a fact it's not going to help the movie studios any. I kind of wonder if this is more of a retaliation from companies like Walmart or Target against the movie studio saying, hey, you know, we can't have Apple selling $9.99 movies when we're trying to sell them at $15 the day they're released. I kind of think that's probably what we're looking at. So they're basically making Apple raise the price so the movie studios can, you know, appease Walmart and Target and Best Buy. And to be quite honest, I get Netflix. I don't buy movies anymore. I just get them from Netflix and watch them that way. Watch them when I want, how I want, and whatever device I want, and send it back when I'm done. It's a very rare movie that I'm going to watch more than once. And it's something like Star Wars or Lord of the Rings. You know, I have those movies. And there was a while there that I was buying a lot of movies on DVD. But here's the thing. Some of those movies that I bought on DVD, brand new, are still wrapped up. I have never opened them and watched them. And by the time I got around to even thinking about it, oh, look, there's a high-def version up on HBO, you know, 2 days from now. I'll just record that via the DVR and watch it that way. So, I don't know. I think that this is not going to hurt. Well, I guess I should say it is going to hurt sales of movies on the iTunes Store. It's not going to help us, the consumer. You're going to get a crappier version that you're limited on where you can play it. Yeah, I don't know. I think Apple really needs to start looking at their relationships with some of the content providers up on iTunes, because it seems to me that a lot of the music companies are not happy with Apple. We know for a fact NBC isn't happy because they've already pulled their content, or at least they're going to this month. And, you know, the less content in the iTunes Music Store, the less choice we have, and that's not a good thing. So I really hope Apple gets their gets this worked out, because this is just not good for us. Skype released a new version of their software. It addresses Leopard compatibility. It's version 2.7. They call it a beta. When has Skype ever not been called a beta is my question. It now works with Leopard's firewall. But really, the most impressive new feature is it actually does video at 640 by 480 at 25 frames per second. That's pretty good video, people, for conferencing over the internet. I've used Skype myself. In fact, usually when we do the podcast, we're using Skype. Of course, we're using the audio quality of Skype, which far surpasses iChat. I remember when Steve Jobs was talking about iChat and Leopard, that they increased the audio quality and this, that, and the other. And to be honest, I'm not hearing it. Skype is really a generation ahead of iChat when it comes to vocal quality. And, you know, iChat's been around longer. I would expect Apple to beat Skype at this. They always tout iChat as this great feature in Leopard and Tiger before that. And, you know, come on. Make it a better sounding application vocally. That's what I want. Hopefully they'll do it. I will say that the video quality in iChat is pretty good most of the time. But, I don't know. This new Skype, 640 by 480 at 25 frames per second. And, you know, your mileage is going to vary depending on your connection speeds, but still, that's, I don't know. we'll see. And you know, this is the great thing about a program like Skype, that it only pushes Apple to do better. So hopefully, you know, this new version of Skype is going to be really good. Apple's going to update iChat, and we're all a winner. It'd be really nice if Skype and iChat could talk to each other, so I didn't have to have two different internet chat programs running on my computer at any one time. I could say I could launch Skype and see all my iChat contacts and talk to them that way. I don't know why they don't do that. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Update on the Macworld Expo. Yes, I'm going. Very, very cool. I'm very excited. I will be at the Macworld Expo. As such, I'm going to be doing a lot of video stuff, a lot of audio podcasting, taking a lot of pictures. Really, the focus this year is going to be bringing the show home to you guys. You know, a lot of you cannot go to the Macworld Expo. It's in San Francisco, and a lot of the listeners of this podcast live literally around the globe. Some of you in Australia, some in the UK, some in Europe, some in the Middle East. I mean, we have listeners all over the world, and a lot of you, in fact, probably the majority of you, you can't get on a plane and come to San Francisco for a week or even a day. It's not cost effective for you to do so. And to be honest, a lot of the times you're going to get all the information you need on the various Mac websites out there, especially during the Steve Jobs keynote. That being said, I am going to go. I'm going to, see what happens with the show. The reason I can go is because we have a sponsor. ProSoft Engineering is sponsoring our podcast and our video shows and the website during the Macworld Expo. So between now and during the show, I hope you visit ProSoft Engineering's website. I'm going to put a link up on the show notes for 157. And during the week of the Expo and for a while after that, you'll see their banners up on the MyMac website. You know, check them out. Buy a product from them. Tell them, or even just send them an email and say, hey, thanks for supporting MyMac.com, because we're really going to work hard to bring you guys what it feels like to be at the show. Not just the small booths, not just the big booths. We're going to try to bring you the entire show. The flavor of it. There's so many cool people at the Expo. If you've never been to one, it's really hard to explain how much fun it really, really is. I know some of you are probably thinking, oh, it's just a bunch of geeks and it's geeky talk. Yeah, you know, it's really not. It's an experience that I hope all of you, if it's not Macworld Expo, they do have one in the UK, they do have one in Europe. Try to get to at least one Macintosh Expo event in your life, because it's just a lot of people that have the same passion for this platform, and they're really nice people, and I think you'll really, really enjoy yourself. You know, some of the things that you can get at these expos, you can't find anywhere else. I remember I bought a watch, an Apple Watch, in 2000. I was going to say 99, but it was Macworld Expo 2000. If you're a longtime Mac user, you may remember Steve Jobs throwing a hissy fit about unlicensed Apple products being sold, specifically these watches. Well, the company actually did have a license to sell these watches from Apple. And I bought one, and I really like it. I think the battery's dead now. And I'm just not a watch wearer anymore. I think that's kind of a phenomenon that's going around the world. Everybody has a cell phone. What do you need a watch for? The cell phone has the time on it. You know, when someone asks me what time it is, I pull out my iPhone and look. It's convenient, and it's very accurate. And I don't have to worry about, you know, does that match my shirt or, you know, anything. I'm just not a watch wearer anymore. But I still have the Apple Watch, and I plan on keeping it because, well, I'm an Apple guy. One of the things that I talked about, maybe last week or the week before, they all kind of start running together, especially when you're coming towards the time that your baby's going to be born. But I'm doing a lot of game reviews, and right now I'm still testing phase, most of them. One of the games that I've been playing was Need for Speed Carbon for the Macintosh. The problem is the game's almost unplayable with a keyboard. It's horrible. The game itself is great, don't get me wrong. It's just not the kind of game you can really play and be competitive using a keyboard. And, yeah, I got maybe a couple races into it, and I couldn't go any farther with the keyboard. So I was thinking about getting some kind of a joystick. Well, as longtime listeners of this podcast know, I am a video game player. Excuse me. And I really like the controller on the Xbox 360. It's probably my favorite video game controller of all time. I really, really like it. Microsoft's done a very, very good job creating this controller. Well, they've got one that's not wireless. It's a wired USB version of that controller, and it works with PC. And you can download the drivers for the PC and use it with any of your PC games. Well, I've got this controller because it also works with the Xbox 360. It's a wired version, but it comes in handy when I forget to charge the wireless controllers, and I want to play a game, and oh, my controllers are dead batteries, and I don't have any AAAs around the house. I just plug this USB version in, I'm good to go. So I plug it into the Mac, and the Mac doesn't see it and doesn't know what it is. So I did a little bit of a search on Google, of course, and I put in Xbox Game Controller Macintosh. And I come across Colin Monroe's website. This guy actually wrote drivers, Macintosh drivers, for this controller specifically, so you can use it with your Mac games. I wasn't sure how good this was going to work, but it's a free program, a free driver, so I installed it, restarted. There it is in my control panels. Let me launch it while I'm talking here. I just hit the mic stand, so if you're wondering what that sound was, it was me hitting the mic stand. And depending on how good this mic's picking up, the baby was crying, and my wife, Julian, went upstairs to take care of that. I would have gone, but I'm doing the podcast, honey. I can't do it right now. So, it's called Pref 360 Control in your preference panel. And sure enough, there's it works. The 360 controller driver version 0.06. So this is still a pretty new software for your Mac. And let's see. It's at teddyboogle.net. And I'm going to spell it out because I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it. It's TATTIEBOGLE.net. And I'm going to put a show note in show 157. So if you want a really good game controller, you're not going to get a better one for the Macintosh, at least in my opinion, than the Xbox 360 controller USB version. I installed the software, plugged in the mouse, restarted the machine, fired up Need for Speed Carbon, and dude, I was flying around the streets using this controller. Very sensitive, exactly the same type of sensitivity I am used to with this controller when I play an Xbox 360 game. I didn't have to do anything. The game automatically recognized that I was using a controller, and it just worked. And it was fantastic. I'm going to try it with some other games, see how good it works. I started using it with John Madden. Well, I guess this is called Madden now. Madden NFL 08 for the Macintosh. I only got to play like 3 or 4 plays before I had to pause the game, and the baby had just woke up, so I was dealing with that, and I never got back to the game. That's actually what I was going to try to do, maybe play a quick game before I went to bed tonight, but I needed to get this podcast done. But so far, so good. It really works. I'm super impressed with it. I'm doing an email interview with Colin Monroe for a column I'm going to write about the controller. This is a fantastic a controller for more than one reason, other than the ergonomics and how well it responds and all that. If you're on an Intel machine and you have Windows installed, guess what? This is going to work right out of the box with Windows Vista. How do I know? Because I have Windows Vista on this Mac, and it works. You know, I fired up a game within Vista, and it just saw the controller and started using it. My understanding is this also works with Mac MAME, and I'd really like to try that. I just haven't got around to trying it yet. So that's one of my small anecdotes that I said I wanted to talk about. The other one is, this is kind of neat. Back in high school, I took broadcasting classes. Most high schools don't have these type of classes, but I was lucky. Battle Creek Central did have this class, and I took it. And I fell in love with radio and television and doing video work. Who'd have thunk, right? And who knew that the skills that I would learn then would really benefit me later in life with a lot of it's different, but the core principles are the same. I kind of wish I had a better radio voice, I don't think I'm very good on the podcast. I don't think my voice is a really good one to listen to unless I've got someone else with me. Then it's more conversational, and it works better that way. And someone can keep me on track. But anyways, I had these broadcasting classes. And one of the things that we were going to do for that broadcast was create a video yearbook. So a lot of people, especially me, did a lot of recording around the high school in my senior year and my junior year as well. Unfortunately, we had never actually made the video yearbook. It just kind of fell apart. And a lot of people recorded stuff, though. And somehow, some of these tapes ended up with me. I don't remember taking them. I don't think they're the originals anyways. I think they were copies, but some of them are in my possession. And I've known I've had them for years. And maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I actually imported them into the computer. I converted them to a digital file by hooking a VCR up to my DV Canon camcorder and capturing them in iMovie. So when I moved over to the new iMac from the G5, I found these movie files that I had imported but never really looked at. And I don't think I've even looked at these video files ever. So I was kind of scrubbing through them, checking them out, seeing what's on there. And a good friend of mine named Troy, he was a band. I think it was 10th and 11th grade he was in band. I don't remember if he was in a senior or not. But this is from our 11th grade. So that would be 1988. And it's a band practice. And sure enough, I see Troy looks very, very young in the video. And it just cracked me up. There he is, turning around, looking at the camera. I didn't film this either. I don't know who filmed this, but I know it wasn't me. But it was a crappy song. The sound on the videotape is just horrible. But it did make me laugh. So what I did was I exported just that segment of it to my desktop as a DV file and then re-imported that video file into the new iMovie 08. And the reason I did that is because I wanted to check out what it's like to post to YouTube using the new iMovie, because I know that's a big feature and I hadn't done it yet. So I brought it into iMovie. I tried to clean it up a little bit, but I mean, there's only so much you can do with such a crappy video. I mean, it really does look bad. And I put a little title on it. It says Battle Creek Central High School, 1988. You could do a YouTube search and find it. It's probably the only one you're going to find if you do that search. But I put it up there, and it just worked flawlessly with an iMovie 08 posting to YouTube. You know, you type in your YouTube username and password. I edited the movie the way I wanted it to, and I just said, you know, send it to YouTube, and iMovie did its thing. About a half hour later, it was posted and ready to go. I actually sent the link to my friend Troy. He's in the Air Force, living in Seattle now. I think he's going to retire from the Air Force here in a year or two. But I sent him the link. I said, check this out. And he couldn't believe that horrible song that they were playing. He has no memory of that at all. But he thought it was pretty funny. So that was my iMovie 08 anecdote. You know, there's a lot of little things that I think that people could be posting up on YouTube for exactly the same reason I did it. It's neat. It's historic. And anybody who went to that school, anybody who played band, would probably love to see this. And they're never going to see it. You're not going to see these people who played band with you unless you go to a reunion. And then only if you bring the videotape with you. And who's going to do that? So, you know, post them up there on YouTube. It's great. If you're still young and you're still in high school, you might want to start thinking about posting some of that stuff out there. Preserve it, because there's going to be a lot of people who really enjoy seeing it. Even if it's not them, they're going to see people that they remembered. My wife's sister, Laura, graduated from that school in 1988. She was a year ahead of me. I don't remember her in school. We did play in band 1 year together. I was in band for the 10th grade, and that was it. But we sent her the link, and she's in the video, but you don't really see her at all. But she was there. She didn't remember it either. But what really made her laugh was, you know, a lot of the 1980s hairstyles and people that she remembered. Some people she had no recollection of at all, and it was fun. So if you've got some of these old videos from high school or college or whatever, as long as it's not, you know, too embarrassing, you don't want to embarrass anybody, you know, consider posting them up there on YouTube. And when you do, make sure you type in on the keywords exactly what this is so people could find it. I mean, if somebody goes up on YouTube now and they look for Battle Creek Central, this is one of the videos that they're going to find. And if they're in my age group, they're just going to be tickled pink to find this. Tickled pink. Who says that anymore? Guess I just did. So this is going to be one of our shorter shows. You know, it used to be that when we did the podcast in the early years, that all of our shows came in right around a half hour. So it's going to be a short show this week. It's just me. Hope I didn't bore you guys too much. If you got all the way to the end of this podcast, thanks for listening. Thanks to ProSoft Engineering for sponsoring our trip to the Macworld Expo this year. When we're there, we're going to do some contests. We're going to do the Apple quiz from the ProSoft booth. And as such, we're going to do contests with you, the home listener. So we're going to have stuff to give away during the Macworld Expo. So keep listening during that nice long stretch of mid-January and January. I guess it's the middle of January, isn't it? It'll actually be during my birthday. I'll be at the Macworld Expo. My birthday is January 18th, so I'll be at the Macworld Expo. And thanks to my wife for allowing me to go. I mean, with a newborn at home, she's going to be quite busy. And for me to take up and go to San Francisco, I feel guilty and grateful at the same time. It's not every wife that would allow a geek like me to do that, you know what I mean? So again, thanks for listening. We'd appreciate it if you send us any feedback for times that I have to do the show. It would be great if I could have played somebody's audio file calling in with their questions or comments. All I have to do is pick up any telephone and dial 1-801-938-5559. Leave a message when it says so, and I'll play it on the show. Or you can send email to tim@mymac.com with your questions and comments or whatever it is. And I'll read them on the show and share it with the rest of the Mac users out there. I'll be broadcasting next week probably from Chad Perry's house, and hopefully the rest of the gang will be there as well, Guy Searle, and one or two other MyMackers. I'd really like to get Donnie on to talk about Log Me In. It's a program that will allow you to remotely access your Macintosh, kind of like back to your Mac. A lot of good stuff going on right now up at mymac.com. Check it out. I'm way behind on getting stuff posted, but hey, I've got an excuse, right? Newborn. Okay, see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.